Welcome to the Today's Leader Podcast. The podcast for the leaders and entrepreneurs of today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul. I see you. All right, John. Finish off. Let's go.
Hey there, it's Coach Cole here, and welcome to episode 320 of the Today's Leader Podcast, the podcast for the leaders and the entrepreneurs of today. Now, hosting the Today's Leader Podcast, I'm acutely aware of the responsibility that I have to continue to present good and great leadership development through both myself and the global experts that we welcome to the podcast. Now, of course, in our journey, we listen to a number of other podcasts, and we'll often use them to compare ourselves to see that we're staying relevant and that our format is contemporary. Now, one of the podcasts that I subscribe to is the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast, and this is a podcast that's hosted by Martin Moore. This podcast is consistently in the 0.5% of podcasts in the world. So 0.5% of the top podcasts in the world. And it was a real honour, and I was immensely humbled when we had the chance to interview Martin for his upcoming book release, funnily enough, called No Bullshit Leadership. But first, let's hear who Martin is. Martin G. Moore is a leadership performance expert and co-founder of Your CEO Mentor, a company whose purpose is to improve the quality of leaders globally. In his 5 years as CEO of CS Energy, Moore grew the company's earnings from $17 million to $441 million, a compound annual growth rate of 125%. Now, throughout his 33-year corporate career, he worked his way up from a university dropout and an entry-level position in a software development company to later become a chief information officer, an SVP, and a head of strategy. In 2018, Moore traded in his corner office to launch Your CEO Mentor with his daughter Emma Green. Now, in conjunction with the book that's coming of the same title, Moore hosts the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast, a weekly podcast that's been downloaded more than, wait for it, 1.4 million times and has listeners in over 70 countries. That's an amazing feat, and congratulations, Martin, for that. Martin's also developed Leadership Beyond the Theory, a global training program built upon his practical in the trenches wisdom. It gives leaders the tools and methods that they need to lead with strength and confidence. And some of the companies that have put their students or their leaders into this program is really quite huge. Now, during our conversation, we tackle some really big leadership questions. What defines value is the really big one. How do we get discretionary effort from our teams? And through this journey, Martin continues to provide tips, tricks, and strategies for leaders to break away from the average. So stay tuned as we welcome Martin G. Moore to our podcast.
The podcast is brought to you by Think and Grow Business, the home of the Think and Grow Business Mastermind. If you're serious about growing your business, get serious and join a mastermind group today. Find out more at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au.
And it's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast the host of the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast. Please welcome Martin Moore.
Hey, Tony. Great to be here today.
Congratulations, Martin, on A, the success of your podcast, and also the upcoming launch of your book, which, funnily enough, is also called No Bullshit Leadership. But before we dive into that, just share with the listeners the Martin Moore story.
Well, it's not incredibly remarkable, to tell you the truth, Tony. I was brought up in Sydney, Australia. I had a great family. There was five of us in the family, parents with five kids. One thing my parents did for us, we weren't well off, we were classic middle class Australians, but they really believed in the value of education. And so they gave all of us the best education that money could buy, and of course sacrificed a lot themselves to do that. And that gave us an incredibly strong grounding for what was to come for all of us. So I was incredibly grateful for that. I spent 6 years in an all-boys boarding school. So when I came out of there, I went a bit nuts, just working out what life was all about. But once I settled down and got into my career, I've managed to do some things that have been supported by people and leadership and my ability to just relate to others, which I think has been the strength of my career, I think, all in all.
Excellent. So share with me the philosophy behind no bullshit leadership.
Well, it's interesting how I arrived at it because obviously leaving a very secure and high-paying CEO job and deciding to go out on my own was a little bit of a leap of faith. And obviously from my knowledge of strategy and strategic planning, going into the most crowded market on the planet was probably not the most sensible thing I could have done. But what we realised and what I realised over time was that even though there are an incredible number of very, very intelligent, capable and experienced people in the world, there are very, very few people that I would call great leaders. And of the hundreds and hundreds of high quality individuals I worked with over my career, I could count the number of great leaders on one hand and didn't need too many fingers to do that.
Yeah.
So I realised that there was a real dearth of leadership awareness, and most of it is just benign neglect. It's just inattention. It's just people focusing on the hard aspects of business, as they call it, not focusing sufficiently on the people, the relationships, and the power of unlocking what's within each individual. And so realising that, I thought I'd obviously had something to contribute in that area. What we did with No Bullshit Leadership was to basically say, let's strip away all the stuff that is either a platitude or is a generalisation or is a nice-to-have virtue signalling style of attribute that we like to apply to leaders and talk about, and let's cut through to what really makes a difference. Let's work out what things you'd need to do differently if you chose to be a better leader. As I like to say, it's incredibly simple but very, very difficult.
Incredibly difficult,
yes.
for the vast majority of people, as we know. I'm a real believer in simplicity and practicality of leadership, and too often what I see is people get caught up in the latest trend or the latest research or the latest academic paper, and all of a sudden that tends to then shift the way that they lead and or shift the notion of leadership within organisations, and I find that can be quite a dangerous curve to be going up and down, because people tend to look through that and they don't necessarily get caught up in actually practicing what we would call leadership. So let's talk about the book. What's the compelling reason that this book needs to be out there, Martin?
Well, I think there's two reasons, Tony. We've touched on those a little bit. The first is that this is a practical how-to guide. And there are very few of those out there. And my mentor in the US, Dr. Nick Morgan, who's helped me through the whole process of navigating the publishing and speaking industry in the US market, basically said to me at the end of the manuscript, which he edited for me, he said, "You've managed to do something that's, I thought, impossible. You've actually written a book that is both different and interesting on leadership." So that's a good sign, right, because he sees it all. I think the number one thing is practical tools, right? Here's the things that you'd need to do differently. And so when I talk about the elements of leadership, I coin them as imperative statements. You must do this, you must do this, you must do this. So it's, deliver value, handle conflict, build resilience. It's the imperative statements that say, if you truly want to be a better leader, here's your roadmap, your path, and your toolkit for doing it. And interestingly, if you choose to do it, it's daily habits, it's discipline, it's commitment, it's putting others ahead of yourself. And so these core principles that underlie that really give you what you need to use the tools and then become better over time. And of course, over time, if you use the tools and you become a better leader, then you will grow your level of courage, you will grow your resilience, you will grow your transparency and fallibility. All of these things come through disciplined practice of the art of leadership.
Discipline, consistency. I mean, John Maxwell always used to say leadership doesn't develop in a day, it develops daily. And it's that whole concept of disciplined, conscious leadership that I know is just missing, unfortunately. So very early in your book, you talk about something that's actually really near and dear to me. When I was with Bunnings, we always were challenged to make sure that we played in position. That was the term we would use, play in position. Be really clear about our role and what we needed to be doing. Now, you share something similar. You talk about working at the right level. So in your eyes, why is this so important for leaders?
Well, I think there's two reasons. The first, when we think about the people who follow us, is that if we're constantly in their knitting, getting down, micromanaging them, being in their level of detail, either doing their jobs for them or assisting them, that's bad for them. They don't have that room to grow. They don't have the space in which to develop and make mistakes and grow their capability. So there's that element of it. For the individual as a leader, it comes down to number one, having an oppressive workload, because the higher up you go, the more breadth you have to cover. And if you stay down in the detail of your people, obviously your workload just grows and grows and grows. And I've seen this so many times in corporate world where leaders are just working 80, 90, 100 hours a week because they can't keep up with their workload. The reason for that is because they're not doing their jobs, they're trying to do everyone else's. So if you actually do your own job, you'll find that it's actually quite manageable. If you understand what that level is that you're supposed to be operating at and you stay there, then you'll be in much better shape. And it obviously leads you into a place where you can develop your skills as a leader. As long as you're overcompensating for your people and down doing their work, you're not doing the work of leadership. So the way I talk about it is, for example, if someone's not doing the job to the standard that's required, what I like to call the minimum acceptable standard, then you've got two choices. Yeah. You can either go in and help them roll your sleeves up and do it for them, in which case you feel better because you get the job done. They don't grow, they don't develop, and you don't get a true understanding of their capability and how much they can stretch. What you should be doing is standing back and leading them to do that job. Now, the fear, of course, is that someone doesn't respond to that and you find that they can't do the job, and then you've got to take a different action. And so for many people, as leaders, they avoid that like the plague.
Also, I'd imagine, Martin, there's a whole concept that a lot of leaders will say, it's just easier for me to do it myself. And they get caught up in, I suppose, not necessarily seeing the return from that coaching and mentoring space and developing their team space to be hitting the standards that their team should be hitting. So how do you mentor someone who's got that mindset of, Martin, it's just easier for me to do it myself? How do you help that leader?
Well, I put the pressure on them to do their own job. And so I make it really, really clear what their job is. Here's the sorts of things I want you to be focused on and looking at. And if you have someone who's not performing and you're getting down there trying to help them to perform, then I can see what you're not delivering in your space. And so it's putting the pressure on for them to deliver their results. The ultimate handbook on this is a book called The Leadership Pipeline. I'm not sure whether you've read it, by Ram Charan, Steve Drotter and James Knoll. It basically talks about different layers in organizations, what the purpose of each layer is, why it's there, what the time horizon should be that you're looking at. And so that's a really good way of deconstructing how to view each person's role based on the level they're at. And so if there's no unique purpose in a different layer, then why have it? Just scrap it, right? It's just cost.
Yeah, absolutely. Good way to think about it. Now, the book's a practical guide. It's a bit of a roadmap from someone that's been there and traversed the heights of CEO. And who have you written the book for, Martin? Who's the specific leader that you wrote the book for?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Tony, because when we started the business, we thought very carefully about who we thought our target audience was, our ideal customer. And as we developed that, my daughter and I, of course, I'm in business with my daughter, Emma. As we developed that, we realized that where we were pitching was for sort of like that mid-career leader or the entrepreneur who'd grown the business to a point where it was in a stage now where it needed some additional leadership skills, not just relying on their own technical and intellectual ability. This has put us at mid-career leaders for a couple of reasons, right? When you think about that young aspiring leader, yes, we have many young aspiring leaders who are fans of our podcast and listen to it regularly, but they haven't yet been in the battlefield long enough to realize why leadership is so hard.
Yeah.
So we find that mid-career leader, they've worked out that it's a hell of a lot harder than it looks.
Yep.
And they've started to look for answers to that, started to think about, okay, how can I do this better? This is really, really hard. But we like to capture people before they get up to those lofty heights where, because of some success and a few promotions and, you know, making a fair bit of money, they go, oh, I'm a great leader. No, you're not. Just means you're really smart and you've been able to play the politics and you're resilient. You've done a few things to get to where you are. Doesn't mean you're a great leader, as is attested by the many people who work for them who realize what their leadership skills are truly like. Yeah. So we like that sweet spot just in the middle. So we say sort of mid-career up to sea level.
Yeah.
Once you get up there, you've either learned it or you haven't.
Yeah.
But I like John Wooden's quote, the UCLA basketball coach, and I actually use this in the book. He says, it's what you learn after you know it all that counts, right? And I think that's just so true, right? You've got to be a continuous learner as a leader. You have to be.
You have to be.
And learning things every day. I learn things from my clients. I learn things from my daughter. Every day I'm learning things that help me to be a better leader.
One of the things that just went through my mind when we were talking, a leader once told me that a lot of people get promoted to their level of incompetency. And I think that's something really prevalent within organizations, within businesses. You see someone with good technical skills, or they're a good salesperson, or they're great at marketing, and all of a sudden they're leading a team, and all of a sudden all of those skills that they presume that everyone has isn't evident within the team. So that understanding how to coach, mentor, develop your team, inspire the team, drive performance is really what's missing. So we often see that, don't we, Martin? People just getting promoted to what we would make see as their level of incompetence.
Yes, it's actually called the Peter Principle. And I did a podcast episode on this last year sometime, because the Peter Principle is so well known that people get promoted to their level of incompetence. And the question as to why that happens, when you look at this shift from being a technical expert to becoming a leader, as you say, it's a completely different skill set. And there are other psychological and emotional issues tied up in that as well. So a lot of people have a lot of their identity tied up in what they do for a living as a lawyer or a marketer or a doctor or whatever. That's part of their identity. And letting go of that and saying, okay, I'm no longer a lawyer, I'm now a professional leader, and going through that transition is emotionally very, very challenging. And a lot of people never let go of that. So, you know, I know a lot of CFOs who at a party will say, you know, I'm a finance guy, you know, when really what they should be is leading the finance function for an organization as a high level leader. And sure, they need some technical skills, but really just that movement from being a technical specialist to being a leader is something that isn't thought about well, and it's not well coached, and there's not much out there that tells you how to do it. And so those transitions through the layers, you know, let go of where you were.
Yeah.
You've got to be really uncomfortable when you go to a new role at a new level. And if you're not, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. It's also that aspect that we're moving away from something that we're really good at to potentially something that we're not really good at, or
absolutely,
in worst case scenario, what we suck at. So it becomes part of that whole ego. So I can certainly see alignment with what you're talking through there. So in your book, you talked about how you drive additional effort. You talk about it as discretionary effort. I would probably, my mindset is around additional effort, aligning performance with a person. What are some of the key things that a leader can do in your eyes, or what they should be doing to build that concept of willing discretionary effort?
Yeah, and this is obviously the holy grail of leadership, right? What you want to do is get a team that is motivated, productive, and driven towards the same sort of purpose and objectives that you want them to be for the organization, for the team. And so unlocking that is an incredibly difficult process. Now, we have to recognize that every single individual is different, and what drives them is different. But if I was going to break this down into some really simple steps, and once again, simple, not easy, simple steps, I'd say start with the purpose, right?
Yep.
And this is, you know, Simon Sinek's work on, you know, start with why is incredibly powerful, because people are motivated by things where they know that they're actually contributing to a higher purpose. So if you can if you can fill in that gap of the why, that's a really good baseline to start with. Now, people won't just automatically respond to that. They'll just go, that's really nice. if you actually want to get them to respond, there's a few other things you have to do. So I'd say the number one thing is expect people to be their best. Don't sit back and just let them choose how much effort they're going to put in. Even your very, very best people, on their very, very best day, they'll give you 80 to 85% of their maximum effort. That's what we all do, right? So we all do that in the absence of anyone telling us to do anything different. So the challenge for a leader is to stretch your people further than either they want to be stretched or you think you can stretch them. You've got to stretch them further.
Yeah.
And there's a huge amount of work on this that's been done over the years. It goes back to the Yerkes-Dodson law. from well over 100 years ago, the studies on stress and performance. When we talk about stress, we talk about it as being entirely negative. You know, I'm so stressed, I'm feeling stressed out, this stress is too much. But as you add stress, performance actually improves.
Yeah.
Until you get to that point where, of course, you put too much stress on and then you sort of decline fairly quickly. But that initial stage of stretching people to get them to their maximum effort is really the most difficult challenge for a leader because everyone's different individually.
Mm.
I find that most leaders are afraid to stretch their people because most people and leaders want to be liked. So they're busy wanting to be liked and they feel as though, well, if I push my people too hard, they're not going to like me. And of course, we all know that happy workers are productive workers, so I'd better not stretch them. Now, this is a little bit counterintuitive, right? Because not only is that a complete fallacy, the happy workers are productive workers thing is a complete fallacy. If I wanted to make my people happy, I could do that really easily. I could double their salary, so I could give them Fridays off. I could put free food and drink in the tea room. I mean, there's a lot of ways that I can make people happy. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to perform better. So the virtuous circle that you're trying to develop is stretch someone beyond where they think they should go, make them feel it, make them feel nervous about it, like make them feel as though it's risky, it's challenging, it might be beyond them, and then get behind them and coach them and mentor them and support them and give them everything they need to show them that they can actually do more than they thought they could do.
Yeah.
Once you do that, they get a different sense of happy. This is not short-term sugar hit happy. This is the deep satisfaction that comes with achieving something difficult. Now, once you've done that and someone gets that taste of, wow, I did that. I didn't think I could, and I did that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've got something to work with because the next time you come back around the circle to do that, they get what you're doing. They felt what it's like at the other end. And my strong belief is that all self-esteem in humans comes from achieving difficult things. That's it. Full stop, nothing else. So if you can actually lead people to stretch them, yes, it's hard. Yes, there are times when they're going to hate you. Yes, there are times when you think you're pushing them too hard and you sort of question yourself. But if you can do that and know someone well enough to work with them and bring them through that cycle and get them to the end where they can look back and say, I did that, that is the magic of leadership right there. That's it.
And it's interesting when I look back on my career, Martin, I always talk about a leader shouldn't be going out to be liked. They should be going out to be respected.
Yeah.
You can't be liked by everyone, but you can be respected by everyone. And when I think back on the leaders during my career that I've helped, supported, developed, stretched, challenged, and they've taken steps up the ladder, they're the ones that have actually maintained contact. The ones that you were potentially or wanted to be a friend or whatever, they sort of move away and do their own thing. So it's really interesting. And I see this with the network of leaders that I network with. When they talk about, oh, such and such contacted me last week, it's always that leader that they've stretched, they've challenged. And some of the guys that are in this network would be the old traditional hard-ass style leader, the ones that are really like almost command and control. But whenever those leaders that they've developed or stretched need that, they'll make the call. And I find that really compelling because, to me, that is all about respect. That is all about, there's no friends there. It's about how can I get the next level.
Yeah. So, oh, for sure. Look, there was a reason why the number one episode of No Bullshit Leadership podcast was Respect Before Popularity. That was it.
Yeah.
Our very first episode, if you can't get over this hurdle, then forget about being a leader.
Yeah, being liked, it's a human condition, isn't it? We all want to be liked.
Oh, yeah.
But and it's something that, and once again, it's that daily discipline, that daily consciousness.
Yeah.
So as a leader, I believe you need to add value. So whether it's to your team or your organization. Now, some may argue that using the words add value is a bit soft and fluffy, but it's a belief that I see that's shared within the work that you do, but you've got a very clear, no bullshit specific framework about delivering value, not necessarily about this warm and fluffy concept of I'm going to add
value.
It's about delivering value. So talk me through that concept of how leaders should bring value to what it is that they do.
Yeah, see, value is at the centre of everything, and this is why it's the centrepiece of our leadership framework and model. Delivering value is the name of the game. The thing that puts a lot of people off is that as soon as they hear the word value, they think of financial value. And so in a not-for-profit, you know, well, we're not value-driven, we're here for the community or, you know, some other reason. Unfortunately, value is very, very misunderstood. Value comes in all sorts of different shapes and sizes. So if I'm running a surgical practice, value might come from better post-operative outcomes for my patients. If I'm the principal of a school, value might come from having a higher percentage of my year 12 students matriculate and get into the university course of their choice. There's a whole range of different ways you can assess value. But no matter what it is, you've got to be crystal clear on what that value is, what your organisation is there to do and how you create value. And then once you're clear on that, every single resource that you have in the organisation has to be directed towards that. I'm a massive fan of simplicity and focus. So what you need to do is work out really clearly, these are the things that add value in order. One, two, three, four. Not you know, I've got 25 priority ones and 68 priority twos and that sort of rubbish, right? Know really, really specifically and precisely what creates value and then get after it. And then the difficult part is stopping everything else. So I've got this huge belief that if you were to do the top, I don't know, four, five, maybe half a dozen at the very, very most things that drive value for your organization, you'll hit that Pareto principle really quickly. You'll be getting 80% of the value. Go after that and stop the crap that just distracts you. Now, the trouble is we become attached to our activity. And as long as we've got activity, we feel as though we're required as people. We're important. We're doing a job that needs to be done. And we feel secure in that. And it's predictable. And it's consistent. And it's repeatable. And everyone's happy. Except it doesn't deliver value. So when I talk about value principles, it is know profoundly what it is that creates value for your organization. Rank that value in ranked order so that you know which things are most important. When anything else comes onto the agenda, you know whether it's more important or less important than the things you're already doing. Trace that value from the moment you start investing in it to hearing the sound of the coin dropping the tin, is what I say. You've got to hear the coin dropping the tin, metaphorically speaking. So you've got to be able to trace that. Now, I'll just give you a quick example of this, right? Let's say I'm the head of procurement for a large organization. My job is to create the most beneficial contracts with our suppliers. They will have a combination of price, risk, service, quality, etc. And once I've done that, I've done my job. I've got a contract that's awesome, but I've created almost no value yet. What I've done is create the potential for value. The value comes when the people who purchase from that contract actually make good purchasing decisions in terms of both volume and supply, and I get those cost savings or those service improvements or whatever it is out the back end. And that's the sound of the coin dropping into the tin. It's not the creation of the contract. It's the execution of the contract to get better commercial outcomes. And you can do this in a range of different areas. The most important thing is to understand that you've got to capture the value. And if you can't see it, if you can't trace it, if you can't physically say, here's where that value landed, here's where I can see it, then it didn't happen. So we do a lot of things that sound logical. It sounds like a good idea. I'm going to do a process re-engineering job to make these processes more efficient. Okay, that's fine, but what value does it create? Do I get, you know, safer outcomes? Do I get less asset failures? Do I get a reduction in people? Like, what do I get that I can look at and say that was worth investing in?
You talk about simplicity, I was once reminded, once again, when I was with Bunnings organization, Bunnings were very focused around keeping things simple and keeping things very clear to the organization what our goals and our aims and our objectives were. And I often believe that there's a certain level of advancement that you need in your leadership ability to enable simplicity. So for a lot of people, they do need a certain amount of complexity or checklists or, you know, routines but to align people to simplicity, they actually need to be prepared and ready for it. Is that something that you'd agree with?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's a huge amount of nuance and sophistication in leading that way, because the leaders who are really, really good at this, they can take extraordinarily complex subject areas, extraordinarily complex sets of facts and data and everything else, and distill those down into their most necessary and important characteristics. And as I like to say, at the very top of a large organization, there is a huge amount of ambiguity and complexity.
Yeah.
There's nothing is black and white. Everything is gray. But down at the very bottom of the organization on the front line, the person doing that job has to know what's expected of them today when they walk in for their shift in order to be successful and contribute to the organization's goals.
Yeah.
So you've got this massive chasm between at the very top of the organization where nothing is clear and at the very bottom where everything has to be absolutely crystal clear. And the layers of leadership in between need to translate that for their teams in their context at their level.
Mm.
And so at the highest level of the organization, being a CEO and being able to say, I'm operating this extraordinarily complex environment, but here are the things that create value for us and here are the things we're going after.
Yeah.
And that's why CEOs get paid the dizzy dollars. And then as you come down through the layers, you've got to be able to interpret and apply that. And so it's an incredibly difficult leadership skill, that one.
And I'd imagine you've also got to be able to stop and arrest those people that want to add complexity as it goes down the chain. So
a
lot of leaders will want to add their own little footprint or their own little thought process, or which is then complicating or making the simple complex.
Absolutely, yes. And there's a lot of that. Overcomplicating things is a huge problem in most organisations.
Yeah. So, Martin, who's inspired you in your leadership journey?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I think at the very start of my leadership journey, it was John C. Maxwell. For me, that was the most appealing, logical, attainable leadership style. So I remember one of the very first leadership books I read was Developing the Leader Within You.
Yeah.
And then I read the sequel to that, Developing the Leaders Around You. And those gave me some really, really good, strong principles about how to lead. And so I started there, and that was obviously a big influence in my life. There aren't a huge number of leadership role models. Now, quite unfashionably, I did like Jack Welch. And if you talk to the people around him, of course, you know, there's a certain style that you adopt in managing an organization with, you know, over 100,000 people spread globally. And a lot of that gets lost in translation. For the people who are close to him, they talk about him as being an incredibly effective and human leader, which doesn't come through in the sort of like the popular press. But I thought a lot of the stuff that he did was incredibly brave. It was not always, you know, directed the same way I would have done it, but he was obviously a big influence on me. And I think there are certain leaders like that who, in reading their biographies or autobiographies, I've been able to see how they've done what they've done. I always like looking also at leaders who are outside of the standard mold of what you'd feel in their profession is appropriate. So political leaders who are courageous are few and far between. There's not a whole lot of courage in politics. When you see a political leader who's courageous enough to do the right thing because it's right and because it's best for everyone and needs to be done, despite the backlash of the fact that it's not popular, those are the leaders that stand out to me.
What do you see as the future of leadership, Martin? Because I guess within the world that we've got at the moment, I always talk about disruptive and divisive, but there's a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of ambiguity, there's a lot of contradictory stuff that's out there in the world. So what do you see as the future of leadership?
Yeah, this is a really good question because my personal belief is that what constituted great leadership yesterday, last year, 10 years ago, is still going to be the right form of leadership 10 years from now. The context changes all the time. And I think if we've learned nothing from the COVID-19 pandemic, we've learned that if you haven't got a good, strong foundation of leadership skills, of trust and respect with your people, if you don't know how to connect with people, if you have low empathy or EQ, those sorts of things will hold you back. And it's the problem's exacerbated in this environment. But really, the sorts of things you did as a leader 10 years ago, if you were doing them really, really well, you do those today and they will work. You do them in 10 years' time, they will work. So I think the future of leadership is you can't get away with being a bad leader anymore. You can't. you've got to do something different. You've got to actually develop those skills because workforces are different. You know, you are going to deal with you know, hybrid workforces who are working from home and coming to the office occasionally, yeah. you can't just measure inputs. You have to measure the outputs now and the outcomes. So you can't yeah. see easily the inputs like time spent in the office or you can't see those things easily. And so you've got to actually lead by results, which was always yeah. the best way to lead, but now you just yeah. you're forced to do it.
I've seen some interesting shifts with some of the leaders that I coach in relation to the hybrid workspaces. It was almost like there was this belief that some of them were happy to do it while this thing was going on called COVID. But now all of a sudden that they're looking at a much more extended future with this hybrid style workplace. Some of them have reverted back into really the need for control.
Absolutely.
And it's something that it's, you know, and part of the challenges that I've given to some of the leaders that I coach and mentor, Martin, is about, okay, we do check-ins online. We can do that. We can keep people connected. It's good that you're doing it. I can see that. You know, the results from your team are talking about that. Let's go to the next stage. How do we develop them and how do we make them better and how do we prepare them for the next role? Because a lot of that was done one-on-one over a cup of coffee within a workplace. So what are your thoughts there around how a leader then starts to, A, remove the need for them to feel in control, for starters? And it was interesting because some of the leaders that I've worked with, Martin, have never exhibited that before. And all of a sudden they've realized that this is going to be a long-term yeah. thing. And it's almost like they've reverted back to some type from the school ground potentially. But then how do we develop our people when we know that they're not necessarily, there may not be the chance for us to be sitting down one-on-one with them?
Yeah, it's such a good question. This is the question, obviously, coming out of COVID. Funnily enough, Emma and I are just developing a new masterclass about leading from home. And basically the story is it's quite easy to work from home. We found that in a lot of industries and technical disciplines, it's very easy to work from home. Much, much harder to lead from home. And I think there are some yeah. things that you can't substitute the face-to-face interaction for. The thing, though, is that with the opportunities for face-to-face, they're much fewer. So you have to be much more selective about what you choose to do when you actually get face-to-face with someone. So you've really got to take advantage of those moments to build the relationship, build the trust, be really clear about the expectations you're setting. People aren't that complex, right? They want to know, you know, three things when they come into work each day. What are your expectations of me? How am I going against those expectations? And what does my future hold? You've still got to give people that level of certainty to the extent that you can each day. So I find that, in this hybrid world, using those opportunities wisely when you have people face to face, working out what's easy to do remotely and what's harder to do remotely. Talent management yep. and development and identification is the thing that's really, really hard when you're remote. You can't see those little interactions that go on. You can't see the how as much as you can the what. You know, it sort of pushes mm-hmm. us into a more transactional space. So the strength of leadership skill and capability that you need is much greater in this world.
When does your book come out?
31st of August in the US, it's published. So it's a US release, US and Canada. In Australia, Em and I will be shipping a bunch of copies over here. We'll have a lot of pre-sale specials with bonus goodies in there so that, if you're purchasing books over in Australia, you can do that easily. And there'll be some bonus stuff there for you, as I said. So very attractive to get on the bandwagon early.
Absolutely. But, how do people get on that bandwagon, Martin?
Through our website, so martingmoore.com. I've got the G in my middle name now because obviously in the US, the middle initial is fairly common, and we're actually able to get that URL. So we've got the domain yep. name for martingmoore.com. So martingmoore.com, all of the book stuff is going to be there, all the bonus offers and everything else. So we'll have an Australian page as well, which talks about if you're in Australia, you know, what you do here.
Excellent. So leaders are readers. So you've been obviously in the process of writing your own book. You've spoken a little bit about John Maxwell and some of the other inspiration behind your leadership. What are you currently reading?
I'm currently reading Strategy Beyond the Hockey Stick, which was written by a couple of McKinsey partners, one of whom I worked with a few years ago. That's a good book. It's actually quite an oldie. I'm reading another book, which I'm sort of ploughing through on valuation on valuation of businesses. I like to read all sorts of different stuff, Tony. I was rereading Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. I've read that a couple of times.
Yeah.
And my favorite book in a long time is a book called What Money Can't Buy, by a Harvard professor by the name of Michael J. Sandel. And that is an incredible book. It's about the moral limits of markets. So that's one of the. So I like stuff that challenges me, that makes me think that I read it and I go, oh, gee, I don't know if I agree with that, and I have to put the book down and think. You know, that's what I love when I'm reading. I want stuff that really pushes me beyond where I'm thinking before I pick the book up.
It's very similar when you go back and reread a book. I find it's what you initially picked up from a book. There may be completely different messages or different alignments or different perspectives that you're suddenly reading it when you read it through the second, the third, or the fourth time. And I know one of the books that really challenged me, and it's one that unfortunately I still haven't got back to, is That Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Oh, yeah. I was really challenged by it. You know, we talk about a world of simplicity, and I would have thought living in the present moment may have been quite a simple concept, but it's quite a challenging, complicated book for me. So I've had to put that one down because I don't know if I'm ready for it, Martin. So that's me being transparent and vulnerable. So yeah,
let me help you with that too, Tony, because I never got to the end of that. Back in my younger days, I'm quite methodical, right? So even if I wasn't enjoying a book or wasn't connecting with it, I was determined that I was going to read every single word till I got to the last page. These days, I'm much more relaxed. So if I get, you know, a third of the way in, I go, you had your chance, dude. You missed it. I'm putting it down now.
I'm not getting this. I'm going to move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what's the vision for you going forward, Martin? So you're leaving the Australian shores and you're heading to the US. So what's the vision? What does it look like?
Well, for us, it's all about impact. And when we set the business up, you know, our purpose, which we spent about 6 months refining. It doesn't sound like it took 6 months to refine because it's nice and simple, but our purpose is to improve the quality of leaders globally. And that's why, you know, the fact that we do have a podcast in over 70 countries globally is fantastic. The US is the big market. So when you've got a 350 million person market instead of a, you know, whatever we have in Australia, 25 million,
26,
it's just a completely different ball game. And so being able to reach more and more people with our message of, you know, practical leadership driven by doing the right things as a daily habit and as a discipline and building over time that capability that you need by doing hard things. That's really the message we want to get further and further into every corner of the world where we can. And just, you know, so incredibly gratifying to see some of the emails that come through to us every day about, you know, the fact that we've changed people's complete perspective on leadership. We've changed the way they're able to work. We've lifted their confidence. They were so fearful, and then after picking up a few of these concepts, they understand them and they put them to practice. And they go, you know, I'm a different leader. And the people that are saying, it's not just at work. This improved my home life. I'm better with my kids. To see that sort of stuff going on. That's why we're here. You know, I'm all about the impact. So is Emma. The more of that we can have, the better.
I think you've just answered that question that so many people ask about what does leadership development do for me. I think you've just answered it because you do see that corresponding benefit in the way that we live our life, the way that we work with our or deal with or live and behave with our loved ones. So out of everything that you've accomplished over the last couple of years, what are you most proud of?
That's a really good question because Emma and I are pretty shit at celebrating success. You know, so when we hit big milestones on the podcast, when we hit big milestones, you know, financially, whatever, we just go, that's really awesome. Next, you know, we're not great at celebrating success. If I was going to look for the things I'm most proud of, I go back to one of the very, very early leaders I had when I was a young project manager in the IT industry. She was an incredible woman, very understated, not a flashy leader, an introvert, just very strong personally, like that innate inner strength. And I remember saying to me once, you can never judge the outcome of a project, as it was at the time, by the result of the project itself. The only thing you can measure is the development of the people along the way through. She said, because there's too many unknowns and things outside of your control of the project. You've got flaky stakeholders. You've got all sorts of things that can go wrong. But if you can actually take the people from A to B and show a growth in them, that's what you have to see as your success. Mm. And so I think, when I look back on my corporate career, it was always around people who I saw that were liberated to perform better and to grow their self-esteem and their impact based on the leadership that I was able to provide them. Since we've gone into business, everything that we do that takes one person and shifts them, as I was talking about before, from a leader who is uncertain, insecure, and lacks capability to someone who is confident and able to go out there and be a better leader for their people. Every time one of those little things happens, that's a big success for us. And we get that every day. So we see it in the little things every single day. Probably the thing I'm proudest of was having the courage to step out of my very secure, very highly paid CEO job and just start with a blank sheet of paper and start to try and build on this dream, this vision that we have. Because I've had a lot of my colleagues say to me, there's no way I could have done that. There's no way I could have done what you've done. I mean, that takes an incredible amount of courage to do that. So, I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud that no matter what happens, we just find a way through it. That's who we are, and we'll just keep doing that.
Excellent. Great response. Is there anything that I haven't asked you yet that I should have asked you, Martin? Sorry.
No, I don't think so, Tony. It's been a great chat. And, I just think that for me, having an impact on leadership globally is an unbelievable privilege, which I take very, very seriously.
Yeah.
As I sometimes struggle to come up with a weekly podcast topic, I think to myself, oh, this is really hard. And then I go, hang on, no, it's not. There's tens of thousands of people out there that are going to hang on my every word this week. I better just get this done.
Yeah.
So I take the privilege of being able to influence people incredibly seriously, as does Emma.
Yeah.
And we put our heart and soul into this. Everything from the content production to the marketing to whatever we do, we put our heart and soul in. We are so protective of our audience and our community and the brand to make sure that we keep delivering high quality stuff all the time. Like, that's who we are, and it doesn't matter how old I am, how many years I run this business for, how many years, Emma runs it after I, fall off this perch. Whatever we do has to be in service of our community, and that's it.
How can people connect with you? You mentioned your website. So how can people connect with you outside of just your website?
Yeah, so we've got martingmoore.com. There's also our corporate website, yourceomentor.com. So Your CEO Mentor is our corporate business where we have a broad array of stuff. The Martin G. Moore site is basically speaking and book. All the other stuff we do in terms of online education, we've got heaps of freebie downloads, a whole bunch of tools there that are free to people who want to go onto the yourceomentor.com site. If you've got those things and you subscribe to the No Bullshit Leadership podcast, your life will be complete.
Excellent, Martin. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's been a privilege to have you on the Today's Leader podcast. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for investing in the leaders of today.
Thanks, Tony. It's been great. Great to chat to you. Thank you.
Join the group of people impacted by Seriously Simple Stuff to get you unstuck. The first book by Tony Coach Curl. Available at Amazon, Tony's Simple Stuff provides the tool for people to master your life and aspirations. 20% of every book sold supports Carter's cause.
And now, it's time for Tony's 2 cents.
One of the really big things that came from that discussion with Martin was the clarity and focus that he has around the development of leaders. He's got a very big vision, and he's got some very clear focus around that vision. Fundamentally, the world needs better leadership. And I'm thinking that you're listening to a podcast like this because you feel the same. So with Martin, you get very clear insight from an accomplished CEO into what leadership is, the value that it simply has to bring to all the stakeholders within the organization, and the way to develop both yourself and your potential leaders within your team. Within the No Bullshit Leadership Framework and book, there is a model where delivering value is the very core of what a leader does. And I don't think there's a person that can argue with that. Premise. Delivering value is what a leader does. But ask yourself this: where do you deliver value for your organization or your business? And maybe, just maybe, if that's taking you a little bit longer than you would like to define, maybe grab a read of the No Bullshit Leadership when it comes out. And that may help you get clarity around the value that you need to bring. And that's my two cents. Thanks again to Martin for his investment in today's leaders. And of course, all his details are provided in the show notes. Now is the time for you to take control of your leadership growth in this disruptive world we navigate. Our aim is to help you become the best leaders you need to be by providing you access to global leaders and experts. If you're looking to build better leadership skills, check out the Today's Leader website at todaysleader.com.au. Today's Leader is a collective mindset to be the best leader today by forging greater success for tomorrow. The mindset to make a difference, the ability to create an impact. Think and Grow Business hosts our Today's Leader Masterminds. Think and Grow Business, where we focus on personal, professional and business growth, improving the performance of people in business. Book your free 30-minute discovery call right from the homepage at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au. You are standing stronger, braver and wiser. Don't forget the golden rule. You know what it is. Don't be an arsehole. I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.